Hey everyone, welcome to the Grief Informed Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Garcia, and this is a place where I bring you authentic conversations with people who are willing to share their journey through seasons of grief. No matter your cultural upbringing, societal conditioning, or faith practice, grief affects us all. Whether you're dealing with a loss, a diagnosis, a broken heart, or the everyday stressors of life, or love someone who is, these conversations are here to support you in that process. So be sure to check out the show notes for potential trigger warnings. And whether you're very comfortable with or deeply avoidant of grief and its many responses, you are welcome here. Thank you for being here, and now on to the episode. Okay, we'll get to the episode in just a second. I wanted to come in here and say, I'm learning this podcast thing, and because of that, we had a little bit of a technical difficulty in this episode. I don't think it's going to bother you as much as it bothers me, but here we are. I wanted to ask for your patience because what you're hearing is about 20 minutes into it, I realized that I had not turned on my podcast microphone and was only recording through my laptop. So I sound like I'm in a box, and Kristen sounds amazing because she is using her podcast mic. And I just want to say, if you can bear through that, I think you are going to love what she has to say, the vulnerability she has, and the wisdom that she has in the work that she's doing with women and couples through their struggles with infertility and just walking that path. So I'm glad you're here, and now on to the episode. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Grief Informed Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Garcia, and today I have Kristen Dillon Snyder. She is an infertility mindset coach and IFV warrior. She's host of the More Than Your Infertility podcast, whose intention is to bring your joy, your hope and joy back while trying to conceive. Hello, Kristen.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm glad that you're here. And you are in which beautiful city?
I live in South Carolina, so I'm just outside of Columbia.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad you're here. And for those that clearly don't know us together, we met... how many years ago was that?
I want to say three or four.
Well, don't ask me. 4 years ago in a certification for coaching. And I am incredibly, incredibly grateful to have met you. And I believe that I said at the time that I met you when you explained what you did and what you were wanting to do, I was like, oh, you're like an infertility doula.
Which that's definitely the best way to put it for some people. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we dive in, can you tell us about your cultural upbringing and background?
Yeah. So I grew up in Connecticut and I am one of five kids, but we were a blended family. And to me, that was pretty normal, even though there weren't a lot of people in our town that had a blended family. And I loved growing up. One of the things I'm realizing now as I'm raising my own child is I was able to play whatever sports or activity I wanted to do after school. And I didn't realize that that was such a privilege, but I got to try everything. I feel like I've played everything. And as an adult, it's like, oh, you want to go play tennis? Got it. You want to do golf? Okay. Like, yeah, I played lacrosse. I did cross country. I did all the things. And so it was really nice to be able to do all of that. I love my parents and I have a really good relationship with everybody, which is really nice. Yeah. And I think the easiest thing was that like life was pretty good. We never had really anything traumatic or big or bad happen. I actually was an EMT in high school.
Oh, wow.
So the biggest thing that I saw was everybody else's pain and everybody else's hurt. One of my brothers actually has, when he was in high school, he was diagnosed with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So he was often very sick and in the hospital. But I feel like now as a grown-up, I'm recognizing that we were very protected from everything that he was going through as his younger siblings. Mm. Also with my EMT hat, I was always playing that role with my parents to try and help educate them on that. But when he was in his 40s, he got a double organ transplant and he's the healthiest he's ever been. And so I don't know, in my world, like when you're sick, you get help, you go to the experts, you find the best people, you travel, if that's what that means, to find the best people for what you're dealing with. And I don't know, it just, I'm really fortunate to say, like, it's always worked out for our family.
Wow. That's impressive. And yeah. And so what number did you say you were of the five?
I'm three. So I'm actually the oldest of the girls. So sometimes I play the role of being the oldest child because the rules were different for the girls. There was also an age gap between us. And then sometimes I play the role of middle child, depending on what story or point I'm trying to make. I feel like those, you know, you see those reels or TikToks, and I think they totally relate when they talk about birth order. So I play a little bit of both.
I get it. No, that makes perfect sense. Right there in the middle, but the firstborn girl. So that, yeah, absolutely. Okay. And do you know your Enneagram number?
Yes, I'm a 2-wing 3. How about you?
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not surprising that you take on a role of caretaker or doing a role that provides care or that provides nurturance or support. Who's love to be needed and love to be helpful. So how do you think that plays out for you at being a 2?
Well, I do think that I used to, before I even knew about Enneagrams and what I was, I used to say I'm always been a helper. Like by being an EMT in high school, like I was doing all of the high school things, and you have teenagers. So like, you know what you're going through in high school. But on top of that, I was literally dealing with life and death with people in my town, and I was going to car accidents on 95 that drove through my town. And so wow. I was doing it on top of handling really big things and being this helper. So I was a helper in my family. I was a helper in my community. I went to college and I wanted to be a doctor. I didn't want to be a doctor because one of the things with my brother was it did always feel like sometimes we would find a doctor and they'd say, I don't know what else I can do for you. And I never wanted to be at that position. So I was like, I want to be a physician's assistant so that I can be sort of just underneath, so people aren't looking at me for all the answers. I didn't want all of that responsibility. I think I felt the heaviness of that. But when I went to college and I tried biology class, it got the best of me. And that was the end of that road.
Yeah, the heart was there. The heart is there. Yeah.
Yeah, but I really feel like where I am now is exactly where I'm supposed to be. And it takes the best of all of what makes me who I am and my natural skills and abilities and my experiences and puts it in a way that I'm totally a helper right now. I'm also like the PTO president at my daughter's school. So like I'm a helper. I love being involved. I love using what I know. I also sometimes say like I'm the big sister to everyone. Mm. Like I went through it and I learned the hard way, and I want people behind me to not have to learn the hard way too.
Yeah.
And so that happened through when I went through my infertility. That was like, this is it. This is where I want to like put the stake in the ground. These are my people. This is where I want to be that big sister to turn around and say, whoa, I really learned the hard way. Let me help that experience be a little less hard for you.
Absolutely. That's beautiful. So how did you get into the work that you're doing now?
Well, so it's funny because I grew up in Connecticut. And so everybody in my town actually then moves to New York City and works in New York City. And I did that. I did that for 9 years. And then life led me to the South. And I know, is that funny?
Partial.
I think I'm going to live longer because I live down here. But when we went through infertility, it rocked my world. And I had been through I'd gotten unmarried. So that was a really hard, challenging life milestone. And I felt like going through infertility was even harder because there's so much uncertainty. When I was getting unmarried, I knew what was happening. I knew what was to come. And I had this true belief that like I would meet somebody else, that my marriage was falling apart because there was someone better. Hmm. But with infertility, you can do all of the things and it might not work. And so there's that extra level of stress because of that uncertainty that even if you do everything right, it's not a step one, step two, step three, here's a baby situation. And so that just felt so much harder and it really rocked my world. And once we were done with our trying to conceive journey, I decided that, well, one, I'd worked really hard for our daughter to get here. It was really hard to leave her and go to work. And so I kind of wanted to spend more time with her. So that influenced a little bit of it. And the other thing was like, I just knew that there was something missing in the infertility community. So I don't know if you've heard this phrase, but it's called Finsta, which stands for a fake Instagram.
No.
Okay. So it's, I had a secondary Instagram account. I had my own personal one, which showed all my life. Wonderful, right? The Instagram perfect. And then I had a secondary account that was just for my trying to conceive journey.
Oh, yeah.
And so I met other women going through infertility that way. Now, this was also back in 2015, 2016. And I think it's a totally different environment now,
yeah,
where a lot more people are public while they're in the process of it. But I was able to connect with people because I wasn't open about it. I didn't want everybody to know about it. And so I was able to show up and say, this is really hard. I'm having a really hard day. Or I heard a pregnancy announcement and I'm crushed and I'm more jealous than I am happy for her. And that made me feel so guilty of being like, what kind of friend is more guilty than happy for another friend? And so then, of course, I, you know, shame pile and all that, judging myself. But I could do that with that account. But I just still felt like there was something missing. And so, again, helper. I've always sort of been a problem solver, and I felt like I need a big sister. I need somebody who's been through it, who's on the other side, so they won't be triggering me and announce, oh, I'm pregnant too now. I needed somebody who knew all the language, because what I found was when I opened up to my friends and family, they were so supportive, which is amazing. I'm so grateful for that, because not everybody even has that. However, most of the time that I was looking to get support and help and feel better and fill up my cup was spent educating them about the next step or the medical procedure or what this means, or, oh, well, the likelihood of that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work. And so I wanted to talk to somebody who got it so I could just focus and talk on me, just me, not have to educate. And so I decided to just become that. And I just started doing it. I also had been doing it to all those people on Instagram.
Yeah.
On that Instagram account, like we had small groups, we would have transfer cycle buddies and egg retrieval cycle buddies. And we would all, and I was spending all of my time supporting them, uplifting them, coaching them. I just didn't even know that that's what that was.
Right.
And then in the process of trying to start my own business is when I was introduced to coaching. And then I was like, that's the name. Like, that's what this is. So I then, decided to call myself an IVF coach. Now, I say that because a lot of people hear of a fertility coach, and it's very different in my mind. Maybe not to everybody, but a fertility coach is somebody who wants to help you improve your fertility. They're going to help you understand your cycle and track your cycle. They're going to help you with your nutrition and maybe tell you what supplements to take. I don't do any of that. I truly believe in the doctors going to like 14 years of extra medical school to be the real experts. So what I do is I help people who are going through IVF with the mindset part, knowing that that is such a big part. If you think of like a Venn diagram and the three circles, they're sort of like the body part, which you go to the doctor for. And then there's the health part for you, where you think about exercising, getting sleep, your nutrition, those kinds of things. But then there's this third component, which is like the mindset. There's the stress, the impact on the other 23 hours of your day. And so that's the area that I focus on.
That's beautiful. You said in there, and now I'm like, oh, let me go after that. You said you wanted a big sister so that you could talk about you instead of feeling like you had to coach people, which I know that we'll dive into that a little bit more later. But my question being, what was it that you wanted in that big sister to be able to share that was about you? Like, what was it missing?
I think, yeah, part of it was that this is what I do every day. It's validation. It's validating that how I was feeling was okay. Validating the fear, and also having that sort of foresight to say, like, I'm on the top of the mountain. I can see where you're going. I can see if you take two steps to the left, it's going to be really treacherous.
Yeah.
And if you take two steps to the right, like, it's going to be not as hard and not as bad. And you can choose to go this way too. Either way will get you up the mountain. One route might take you a little bit longer, but also I see the path, and I know you can get up here and you can join me. So it was a little bit of the validation of where I was and not being, you know, that toxic positivity. I think most people do the toxic positivity immediately. Like the, you've got this, it's going to happen. You're meant to be it. It will work. And it's like,
yeah.
Cause you know, when like when you hear an affirmation or mantra and it feels so off, like too high,
right?
Then you actually start negotiating with yourself and counter thinking about that. So if somebody was like, oh, it's totally going to work, you're fine, I'd be like, in my head, I'm thinking, well, actually, you don't know that. Like, yes, the statistic is this, and I'm older, and I've actually tried this before, and it didn't work yet. So, like, it actually did the opposite of what I thought. So having the big sister, it was, one, the validation of where I was to really show up authentically and say, I'm scared more than I am hopeful. But also someone to say, you've got this, and I know you'll get through this. Just keep going.
Right. That's beautiful. I mean, I keep saying that. Everything is, I'm like, this is so powerful, because that's truly, it's like you're doing the hard thing. It's okay to be seen as it's affecting you. Like, this clearly has an effect, and it's being validated rather than bypassed. Like, just don't focus right on that. And I love that you said that and call that forward, because it does have the opposite effect. Our mind can immediately shift to what we think is going to not be the case for us. Like, it could be that way for everybody else, but it may not be the case for me. And just having support mm-hmm. during that's huge. Okay, so you decide you want to start doing this work. What are some of the things that come up for people that are going through infertility that you see that you're like, okay, you've got to know about these. These things are going to be the ones that will affect you the most.
Well, the biggest thing that people talk about is they're very aware of triggers like a pregnancy announcement, because they come every day of the year. They come out of nowhere. Usually also people going through infertility are in their late 20s and 30s. And so just their cohort of friends are in that timeline where the milestone of life that's happening is having babies. So the triggers is the biggest thing, because nobody's ever taught us how to handle when something keeps happening like that. And what I've learned is that the trigger is so hard because, again, you see someone with a pregnancy announcement and the instinct is, I want that. She has what I want. I'm trying everything and I haven't gotten it yet. What if I never get it? And so then it puts you down this spiral staircase of just doom and gloom of like, I don't have it. I'll never have it. Now, what I know is that having jealous feelings or thoughts is just a signal of something you really care about.
Right.
But what we have been raised to think is like, don't be jealous, be grateful for what you have. Yeah. And that doesn't, again, validate how you're feeling right there and then. And again, you can be going through IVF and there's this level of uncertainty. Like, even if you're doing all the things, injecting yourself with the shots, like at the end, you might still walk away without the baby. And so it's a constant reminder of what you want and what you don't have. There's other triggers like birthdays, anniversaries, New Year's Eve, and then holidays, because holidays, especially with social media, everybody's posting pictures with their children and their families, and it's this other constant reminder. So the first thing I started working on with people was triggers and how to prepare for them. It's a little bit, my coaching is part of preparation and then reaction. Because we can prepare as much as we can. And I love to do that. And I actually, that came because my mom was a flight attendant. And so every time she got on a plane, she had to say, hey, in case of emergency, you know, the oxygen mask might come down. Here's how you use it. If the plane lands in water, get the life vest. These are the exits. Like, she literally talked about the worst case scenario every single time before she went up in the air. But that normalized that it's okay to be afraid of it, that it is a possibility, but this is what we do about it. And so I was raised to believe that when you prepare for the worst, it doesn't happen. And so
– wait, when you prepare for the worst, it doesn't happen? Okay.
Well, think about a flight attendant. How many times do they go up in the air and they talk about the worst case scenario? Mm-hmm. And how often are those things actually happening? Not enough.
Yeah.
Thank God. Let's keep it that way, right? But like – it's like if you have insurance, you don't need it. But the 2 month lapse that you might not have insurance, it's like, oh, shoot, that's when the thing happens that, like, you know, the flood leaks or you get into a car wreck. Right. And so, listen, it's not a scientific research backed thought. It's just a belief system in my family that has served us well.
Yeah. Preparedness is everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So we prepare as much as we can. We prepare for saying, like, other triggers are social events, mm-hmm. you know, holiday season, going to all the parties, even going to weddings and bridal showers. Like, you're going to see your friend's mom who you haven't seen in forever. And she's going to go, oh my gosh, do you have any kids?
Yeah.
And so you're constantly inundated. So the best thing we do is we prepare ahead of time, but then we also prepare with, okay, what do we do if we find ourselves in the position where, like, oh shoot, I'm feeling really bad. Mm. So that's the first thing. And then I've also learned that there's just four main stressors of going through infertility. And so part of it is a lot of the women I work with think that they're the worst case scenario. Mm. They think that they're the broken one, that everyone else around them, even if they have infertility and even if they think that they've got it worse and that they're the ones who are just managing this poorly. And so it's a lot of, again, validation that what they're thinking and feeling is something I hear on the daily from everybody I work with. Because here's the other thing is, I wanted the big sister because I also wanted the privacy of, like, one person kind of knowing what I was going through. I didn't want everybody at work. I was in a position where, like, I didn't want people at work to know this sort of weakness or vulnerability. And so the people I work with are in a similar position where they have wonderful jobs. They love it, but they don't want everybody in their job or in their life to know the sort of challenges of it. And so I'm the resource for them so they can have that space and time to talk about it and to be seen in that so they can go back to their everyday life wearing sort of the mask of, I've got this, my life is put together, when really they don't feel that way. And so I help them start believing in themselves so they can feel that way again. But in the meantime, they can do it more privately.
Yeah.
So it's validating where they are and also just understanding the way our brains work to say, oh, it's not a me problem. If that's the one thing my clients learn from going through this is, like, the way I'm reacting and thinking is not a me problem. It's normal. Anybody else in my space would feel the same way. I feel like that is worth everything.
Yeah.
I often say, and then my clients tell me later, like, oh, Kristen, I heard your voice in my head saying, of course. I say that so much. Of course you feel the way you do. Of course you cried when you heard that announcement. Of course you're wondering if you can get through this. Because there's just this natural instinct for all of us. And I don't know if it's a female thing, but, like, is to be really tough on ourselves. And we think that being harder on ourselves is going to help, and it doesn't. And the other thing is that we think that we're the problem.
Yeah.
And we're not.
Wow. But I mean, it's really true. Like, you have a lot of it is just getting in a place of more self-compassion and learning
yes.
to be more compassionate to yourself. Yeah. And then, so the four stressors.
Oh, yeah. I didn't talk. I didn't
say that. No, yeah. Tell me more about that.
Okay. Well, the four stressors I think are important to hear because someone who's not going through infertility, like, if you're listening to this and you know somebody, well, here's what I should say. Infertility has increased in the amount of people who have it. So when I was going through it, it was 1 in 8 couples, and it's now 1 in 6.
Oh, wow.
And so it is more common. So you know somebody going through infertility, whether you actually know it or not, whether they've opened up to you or not, you know somebody in your world who's going through it, or definitely somebody will eventually. And if you have not gone through it, you don't understand. And that's not not a you problem. It's just you haven't walked in these same footsteps. Just like in any grief situation, right? Like, if somebody hasn't lost a parent, they don't know what it's like to lose a parent. And I really want more fertile friends, more people who are not infertile to understand so they can maybe walk a little bit lighter around people and stop some of the triggers. Because, like I said, the triggers happen all the time and most often unintentionally, right? People have the best of intentions when it's the friend's mom going, oh my God, so are you married? I know you're married. Do you have kids yet? Like, she's not trying to point out what you don't have. She's hopeful for you. She believes in you. She thinks you'll be a wonderful mother. Like,
right.
So I think it's important to help people understand. So I talked about the triggers. One of them is just the social input, right, of meeting up with people. And we always ask, like, you know, your status. Are you married? Do you have kids? What's your job title kind of thing? And those kinds of triggers from left and right, they're really hard. There's financial stressors because infertility treatment is really expensive and not everybody is covered by insurance. Right. So it's really interesting. This is the only disease that insurance will pay to diagnose the disease, but it will not always pay to treat the disease. Hmm. And so you could have infertility, you could get diagnosed with it, and you could have amazing insurance like I did because my husband was in the military and so we were under TRICARE, but TRICARE does not pay for infertility coverage unless there's literal actual damage to the military member, like while in combat, to their groin kind of thing. Yeah. So it's really hard to prove in that situation. So you might need to go through this and you might need to pay out of pocket. But even if you don't have to pay out of pocket, every fertility plan, insurance plan is different. Some might say you get $20,000 lifetime. Some might be $20,000 a year. Some might be we'll pay for three rounds. It just all depends. And so you're navigating that financial stuff. Also, the average person needs three rounds. Hmm. So if it's $20,000, that's eaten up in one round. The meds alone can be upwards of $8,000.
Wow.
So some people who have fertility coverage will use it just for the actual treatment and then pay out of pocket for the meds so that they can possibly get money for a second round if they need it. And then what happens is you feel like your life is put on hold. It's put on hold because you don't want to plan a summer trip. One, financial reasons, because you might not need that money to go pay for another round because this round might not work for you. Mm. But also you might be pregnant then, or you might be going through another round. And so you can't be traveling because you need to be there. So it can be hard feeling like your life is on hold. It also feels on hold because all your friends around you that you went to school with, that you grew up with, got jobs with, like you've all been hitting all these milestones together. There were, you know, probably a 3-year span of everybody getting married. And then you're here and they're all having babies and they're announcing pregnancies, having their babies. Now they might be announcing their second pregnancy and you're still in the we're married, it's two of us stage.
Yeah.
It also impacts your body and your physical being. Like you're injecting yourself with hormones. It's going to change your emotions. It's going to change your energy. You're going to want to reach for all the carbs and the couch when maybe you're the fittest, most active person. It's literally going to challenge that. When you're going through the egg retrieval process, your stomach is going to bloat because you are growing many follicles, like a lot. Like normally when you have your period and you feel cramps, that's because one follicle is growing.
Wow.
When you go through the egg retrieval cycle, it could be 20, it could be 30. So like think about how much more bloated you're going to feel. And so sometimes women who are not pregnant but want to be pregnant actually look somewhat pregnant. And so you've got to hide that, especially if you're at work. And so physically you're feeling bad. A lot of people put on weight with the medicines. You have to inject yourself. There's side effects with the injections, whether it's knots or itching or bruising. So it's just like this, it's a silent struggle. You don't look sick.
Hmm.
And if you're doing it under a cloak of secrecy, which a lot of the people that I work with do, they open up to their friends and family. But like if you're going to the grocery store, someone at the grocery store doesn't know. And it's like experiencing grief for a lot of things, right? The clerk at the grocery store doesn't know if you've just lost your mom.
Yeah.
Right? They don't know. And with infertility, everyday life, people don't know. And so you are in the back of your mind in this, like at home is where you feel like you're carrying through this.
Yeah.
Really challenging thing.
So the type, I mean, the way that you're meeting grief is one, the uncertainty that brings you to a place of grief. And then also if you're, seeing your peers or seeing your family, what are the conversations you're hearing from women about, and even dads and the partners that are there with you, what are you seeing that they're experiencing together that they're having to walk through with this situation?
Do you mean like, what does it feel like for the partner?
Yeah. Like what do you see them navigating through this process? Like I remember as a doula, like I could work with a couple and I could tell different levels of health in their relationship based on how they interacted with the process of birth. Like it was like getting, it's a very intimate thing to be walking with a couple
through the birth of their child, and I'm sure the conceiving of their child, they're given information that might feel, you know, very private. And so then thus the public walking through the disappointment or how this is affect the stressors mm-hmm. affecting their marriage, it's almost like you would be witness to their dynamics of relating that through the process. Like, what do you notice about the couples that seem to basically support each other the best or support this process the best? What are they doing?
Well, the best, again, is validating and recognizing that it's not the same for the husband as it is for the wife. Mm-hmm. But also, everybody handles grief and stress differently. So when it becomes a challenge is because the woman is feeling one way and she looks at her partner and he's not experiencing it the same way.
Yeah.
But also, it impacts men and women differently. Most women complain, even if they have the best, most supportive husband, in the back of their mind, they think he still doesn't get it and it doesn't impact him the same way. Mm. He is not thinking about every decision he makes through the lens of, does this hurt or help my fertility? Mm. Even if there's male factor infertility, there's a lot of steps with male factor infertility that you can do that make it easy to overcome that hurdle. And then the man's off, like his job is sort of done. Where even if it's male factor infertility and nothing's wrong with the female anatomy, she still is the one going through it, giving the injections, and the amount of sleep she gets matters. The amount of water she drinks matters. The amount of caffeine she drinks matters. Like, the makeup of her nutrition matters. Her egg quality matters. The stress that she's going through and her cortisol level, it matters. And so every decision that a woman that's going through infertility is filtered through, does this hurt me or help me? Does this hurt my chances? Does this help my chances? And the men, it's just not the same. Also, men don't all, not all men, but most men are like, well, I'll be a dad when I'm a dad. It doesn't matter. There's not that ticking clock mentality of like, we've got to do it now. They can be more easily distracted. And also, I just feel like men in general are just calmer. The other thing is, a lot of the men show up and they want to be the rock. Right? They're your solid ground rock. But what I have witnessed after doing this for so long and working with so many couples is that generally the couples come together as two very healthy, happy, best in their life situation people. And then infertility happens and one of you starts feeling bad and sinking and getting lower and lower. Whereas then your partner has to become this rock for you and they don't know how. And I think what we do is we set up couples for failure by doing that, because now we're leaning and we're expecting on our partner to be this person that they've never had to be before, we've never needed them to do, and they don't know how because they've never done it before.
Right.
So a lot of the husbands will be the ones to be like, it'll be fine. Like, I had a client who literally just went to her 8-week ultrasound and she's gone through miscarriages. And so this is like the vital, like she's pregnant. But she's terrified to go into that ultrasound and be told that there's no heartbeat.
Right.
And so her husband's like, we're fine. It's going to be great. And he's trying to be the steady rock for her. But the way that shows up for her is that he doesn't get it. He doesn't understand how fragile I feel.
Yeah.
And he doesn't understand how it literally could be taken away with one ultrasound. And so – the benefit of working with me and my clients always say is like the husbands feel so much relief because that pressure of being that rock is taken off and they can just show up as the husband or the partner. Hmm. They're often the ones who then say to their wives, hey, have you talked to Kristen lately? Like, maybe you should message her.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're like noticing that she might be getting a little sassy or a little short. So we work on ways to sort of set you up for success, like letting your partner know to say, hey, when you say those things, like, it's going to be fine, we're fine, it invalidates how I'm feeling. What I really want from you is to say this instead. Mm. And so it's teaching them both how to show up for each other, recognizing that everybody needs something different. There isn't like some prescription to say, this is the right thing versus the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But it really, I do see the relationships and it does challenge even the best of the best relationships. Again, because this is usually one of the first challenges that the couple has gone through together.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's going to call you forward to your skill set. Like, it's a new dynamic. And so learning how to navigate that is going to empower the next time that you're going through something. You're learning how to do all the communication and learning how to do the supporting of each other. I love that you're helping them know how to communicate it, but also offering them support so that they can siphon some of that over to you for the when we get in our crazy making in the mindset, and that you can help them untangle that. So what do you, when you're working with couples and women, what part of the job is of this for you is what gets discouraging for you? Like, where do you see like, oh, and you yourself have to remember, what are the parts of this work that make you feel a little discouraged sometimes?
Well, I think what I've noticed is, because now I've been doing this long enough, that again, it doesn't always work.
Right.
And so I wish, if I could wave my magic wand, I wish I could just make IVF be like 100% guarantee.
Yeah.
Because you could do everything right. And you could be so deserving and it could just not work.
Yeah.
And that breaks my heart, right? So whether it's miscarriage or so you get close and you get hopeful, that's really challenging and hard. It's also that I can't fix everybody. So, you know, you can bring the horse to the water, but you can't make it drink. So sometimes there's people who are a little bit more stubborn and set in their ways.
Yeah.
And again, this is a really challenging experience. It can go on for a long time. There are people who go through this for 4 or 5 years, right? So it can be really hard to change the mindset and the way you look at things. The best is when people say to me, like when they're, it's the day they're transfer and they say, hey, I know no matter what happens, I'll be okay. Mm. Like that to me is like the biggest, greatest win. Because at the end of the day, that's all we can do. So, but what's hard for me is that it doesn't always work. And even if everybody does everything right, it might not work.
Yeah.
And I also have to remember that I'm allowed to have my feelings too. Like I'm allowed to be attached. I'm allowed to wish and want this too, but I want anybody listening to hear that positive thoughts do not create babies.
Yeah.
And so it's not, if it's not working or it hasn't worked yet, it's not because you're not thinking positively about it. It's not because you didn't live your life right. Like, because I'm also on my side, like wishing and hoping and praying and trying to will this baby to your life too. And sometimes it's not that it's not enough. It's that it needs more.
Yeah.
Like there is that miracle component to a point, and there's only so much we can control.
Yeah.
So I have to give myself space for my emotions too sometimes. And that's what's wonderful about coaching is I know that, right? Like doctors need doctors, therapists need therapists, like coaches need coaches, and I have my own space. So I don't just talk the talk, I walk the walk too.
Yeah. So walking through, of course, like that just brings up grief that you're, the potential in your coaching is to meet someone's grief in the sense of they just found out that it didn't work. They had a miscarriage. What have you gained from the beginning days of this work to now that has helped you facilitate grief? What have you learned about grief since the beginning to now?
Well, in the beginning, I was definitely that person who would say things that were more hopeful and positive to be like, it's okay, you try again, like you've got this. And over time, I've learned that they need to go through all the steps. There's no shortcut through it. And the best thing is just to be present to witness the grief. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I actually don't even have the perfect words to say when somebody's going through it right in the moment because there aren't perfect words. It's more of being right there with them and literally most often virtually. And sometimes that is enough.
Yeah.
And it's just holding the space to me feels much more powerful and effective than having this one sentence to say the right thing. And I think that's where people get in trouble. And hey, before I did this, I also was an offender of saying all the wrong things. And I've learned from that, not only in infertility, but in other experiences too, where if somebody lost a parent, I'd be like, oh, it's cool. At least you had a good parent. Like, what? No, right? Like, I now know, like, at least it was someone you loved. Like, no,
yeah.
There's no at least anymore. Yeah. There's no more just. And so I think just saying, I see you, this sucks, this is hard, and I'm right here is usually what I go to in the words that I say. But holding that space, sometimes we just do a call and it's them crying.
Yeah.
Just them crying and me being right there with them.
Yeah.
Because that is more helpful, is what I've seen, than trying to come up with the right sentence.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's so true that if I could help anybody listening understand to me, the number one phrase that will just crush a soul is at least in anything. It could have been, you didn't make, you know, the volleyball team, or you didn't have, and somebody says, well, at least. It's so incredibly invalidating. And I love what you say about the presence. I'll have to find her name. I cannot remember it, but she is a therapist that shared that one of her clients had an experience where he had just lost his child, and he went to the grocery store and he saw somebody he knew, and this person like saw him, and they saw that you saw me and I saw you, like clearly we made eye contact, and the person just got immediately interested in the can of green beans that he was looking at and didn't even acknowledge the person who had just lost their son. And he went back to his therapist and said, it's so difficult because people don't want to approach me because they think they don't know what to say. But there's this feeling for him, it's like they think my grief is contagious. Like that somehow if they engage, either one, this is going to happen to them, or two, that somehow like just talking about it is just, I'm going to dissolve into a puddle on the floor and make everybody uncomfortable. And it's the reality of, you don't have to say anything, just acknowledging, just like what you said, like, I don't know what to say, but I'm here and I'm available. How can I support you? Is so powerful. And I love that you're doing that with people.
Yeah, thanks. Well, and that sort of comparison thing and fear of the bad news is really common in the infertility community, because people will go into Facebook groups to try and learn more information. Because again, the doctors are talking to you about the medical stuff. And then what happens is then you want to find other people with your same stat and your situation. And so I help my clients not need that external validation as much, because it does become triggering. Like they'll be like, well, I heard about a girl who did this and then this and then. And so I often say bad news is not contagious.
No. Yes. Yeah.
And so that's what that therapist was saying, or that experience with that therapist story is like, that bad news is not contagious. And so it's important for people to know that. And in the infertility world, it's not the at least often, unless it's a miscarriage. That's what's so weird, is when people have a miscarriage or lose a person, people say, well, at least. It's like, no, not like at least you know you can get pregnant. Like, I just lost that baby. But it went for the people who aren't at a miscarriage situation but are still trying to conceive and struggling with that, there's a lot of unsolicited advice with the just. Just do this or just do that. Just relax. Just go on vacation. Just put your legs up. Like, just drink an extra glass of wine. Like, just try vitamin D supplements. Like, literally, when you say unsolicited advice, it makes us feel like you think we hadn't already thought of that.
Right, right.
And there's nobody I know who's going to a fertility clinic, injecting themselves with medicines, going under anesthesia for these procedures, having multiple surgeries, who has not already considered all the things.
Right.
Like, your sister's coworker's aunt's daughter's friend does not know a secret that you haven't found yet.
Right, right. Well, and shout out to my adopted mom, Darcy Terry, who I quoted, unasked for advice is the same as criticism. It's just going to be received as, you're criticizing me that I'm not capable or doing enough. Yeah. Or that I hadn't thought of that, even if that's not your intention. But the unasked for aspect of it Yeah. It's
yeah.
It comes from, again, we as people hearing it can understand it at a level of that might be your way of showing care and concern. But that also had heard, and again, I want to quote people and then I don't remember their names, but support can only be supportive if the person perceives it as support. Like, you can't think mm-hmm. that you're supporting somebody by offering unasked for advice and think they should just receive that as support. They have to believe it is supportive, which typically means they're asking for it. So yeah, it's a good litmus test. So
I love that. I've never heard that. That's yeah. amazing.
Yeah.
I think too, it's, I was just talking about this with my cousin, and it's because of the receiving person's discomfort.
Yes.
And it's because they think they have to say the thing to make you feel better.
Right.
And that's not what anybody going through the grief or the infertility is hoping for from you. We just want the validation. So instead right. of advice, just validating. And like you said, just saying, I see you, dude, and I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Is enough. Like, that's enough. Saying, I'm sorry, period, is enough. And so I want somebody listening to know that we are not looking at you to fix us or to heal us. We want you to see us.
Right.
And that's the difference. And so people need to get comfortable with feeling uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But also that starts by knowing that we're not looking at you to fix us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a true societal shift. Like, people have, if we've never been trained how to do these situations for others or with others, which is why we have a podcast or why we talk about it, because you'll be in family dynamics and you'll wonder why your cousin doesn't really want to hang out with you. And it's because maybe whenever they're you're around, it's because you might be saying something and not realizing it's hurting, and they don't know themselves, like the stuff they're dealing with, the capacity to come back to you and go, hey, could you not say that? Or they don't have the time to, or the capacity to navigate that. Like, it's just okay, it's easier just to kind of not hang out with cousin, you know, mm-hmm. Samantha, I don't know. And so if you want to go the extra step and be informed to how to show up, this is incredible, incredible information. So I want to address one. I know we talked about it on our call earlier. The elephant in the room, when people hear of, this is again falls under the unasked for advice or unasked for opinions, but when people hear of the $20,000 and you need the IFE and all these things, the number one thing people say, why don't you adopt? Can you to walk us through that process?
That one usually comes with the word just in front of it. Why don't you just adopt?
Just adopt, yeah. Yeah. Which feels so invalidating to adoption too, by the way. Can we say that? Yeah.
For sure. And that literally was said to me by one of my best friends who was so supportive and helpful, and she was trying her best.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And she said that to you, and y'all are best friends. Were you able to how did you navigate that?
Well, I didn't know what I know now, and so I just swallowed it and changed the subject. What I would do now is I would speak up, but I'm also in a much more healed place and I know better. But again, I try to help my clients be in that position so they can feel that way. It depends on the situation. That's what I was talking about with the triggers. We usually come up with sort of three different responses to things. And I like to think of it as like a target or a bullseye. There are people in the center who you're going to be willing to share anything and everything with, and you're going to show the real raw to them. So she would have been in that circle, and she would have been now somebody I would have said, you know, I know you mean well, but saying that is one of the worst things. It really makes me feel like I should give up, that you don't believe in what I'm doing, and that I shouldn't have a chance to try to have my own child. And instead I would have rather you just say this. But I didn't say it then. So I went home and I cried about it. And then I went on that secondary Instagram account and I shared with people who understood to be like, whoa, sorry that happened. The challenge with the response and the solution, again, you might be thinking, well, why don't they just fast forward to adoption? Because then they'll have the kid. The thing is, one, adoption is not certain either. I know people who've gone through that process and have not walked away with a child where it has failed, even to the point where literally they're at the hospital to take the baby home with them with a baby, a car seat and everything, and it doesn't happen. So it doesn't always happen. Two, it's even more expensive. And the journey and the process to go through adoption is even more challenging than going through infertility. But what I like to say is that most people will always try the simplest, easiest version right in front of them first, right? Like, you're never going to say, let me go run an Ironman before I run a 5K.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to start with the 5K in your neighborhood, in your town. It's closer. It's easier. The barrier to entry is a lot easier. So if you've tried at home to conceive a baby and it's not working, you usually wait for a year. Unless you're over 35, 6 months is when, if it's been 6 months, then you can go to the doctor. And listen, if you really wanted a baby yesterday, you can go to the doctor at any point. But those are the standards.
Yeah.
Then they're going to do some testing. And then they're going to say, hey, let's just do timed intercourse. Yep. And then they're going to say, okay, that hasn't worked. What's the next level? Okay, that hasn't worked. What's the next level? And it's important for people to go through the process to see and understand for them what works for them and their family and their level of capacity and understanding and wanting a baby. There are people who've walked away from trying to conceive who won't do IVF. Because they just – IVF for them is not an option. Right. And there are people who go through IVF, but then they need donor gametes. And sometimes people need a surrogate. But you can't just like go to the surrogate or just go to adoption. Most people want to give themselves the chance to try to prevent the what if and to prevent the regret, which is, unfortunately, through infertility, sometimes a thing that you can actually quantify.
Yeah.
The cost of knowing or preventing that what if or preventing that regret, you can sometimes quantify because you did 3 rounds of IVF and spent $60,000.
Yeah.
But that might be money well spent to understand that you tried everything, you gave it your best, and that's not the road. And then when you're at the point, you get to decide, okay, so where are we headed now?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And to the people that are tempted to say it, because they might be listening, that they thought, you know, that wouldn't be to your best friend that said that. What would you say to them?
If they said, why don't you just adopt now?
Yeah. Like, well, if they've got it in their head that they really want to go to their friend and ask them, why don't they just, why don't you just adopt? I don't understand. You explained it so well.
Well, I think if my friend were to say that now, to say like, oh yeah, I know somebody at work who's like going through IVF and I just want to tell her, why don't you just adopt? I think I would say to her, I know that your intentions are really good because you're trying to solve their problem and take away their pain.
Yeah.
But this is not your – they're not looking to you to solve this.
Yeah.
They're not looking to you to fix this and heal this. And this is their journey. It's kind of like when you have a friend who's in a really bad relationship.
Oh, yeah.
And you like know the dude's really bad. Most often people don't say anything until they break up and they're like, oh, thank God, he was such a jerk, right? Many people are not ready to receive that. Now, your friend might or the coworker might eventually get to adoption. But again, it's after they've exhausted all the steps before them. And I'm telling you, as somebody who's at the footsteps with these other people walking this walk, everybody's line on when they're ready to try the next level or to say, we've got to try something different, or we're stopping, is different.
Right.
And there's no way my friend would know what that means for her coworker.
Right. Yeah.
And I promise that coworker has that as a plan B in her mind because she's aware that adoption is an option. You're not bringing new news to her.
Yeah.
So instead, the best thing to do is to just say, I recognize that what you're going through is hard and I'm here for you.
Okay. So what if I'm at that bridal shower for somebody and I see a friend and I know that they are, they're walking through an infertility situation. And I love that you gave the circle. So the inner circle, then there's going to be, you know, they expand from there. Mm-hmm. And I guess what's the societal, and it totally would depend on, there's so many cultural aspects here, societal, of like just approaching somebody going, so how's that fertility treatment going. Like, you wouldn't do that, but sometimes people do. Is that just because of the circles? Are you saying, you know, and then your answer, their answer to that might depend on where that person lands in the circle?
Well, I think the best thing for now would be to talk about, again, like the mom, the friend's mom, right? The fertile person who's curious about the girl who's been married for 3 years and doesn't have any kids.
Yeah.
I think that if that person is very open about their infertility and you know about it because they share it on social and it's everywhere and they talk about it all the time, talk about it. Say, I love hearing about what you're going through. I've learned so much through you. And it's really cool to see how strong you are as you go through this.
Yeah, that's okay. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. That's what you say. If you know about it because someone told you that they've been trying and they haven't had success, the instinct might be to go up to them to be like, oh, honey, I see you. I'm praying for you and George.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Well, don't do that.
Secondhand information, not an invitation. Okay.
Like, don't do that. The best thing to do, because again, you either know because they've told you or they're telling the world. Yeah. Or you have a hunch, or you think you know, or you heard from gossip or secondhand stories, or you're assuming because, man, they've been married for a couple of years now. Maybe they want to have babies and they're always with the kids, other kids, right? Like, yeah. You know, the best thing to do is just to say, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. What's been going on in your life?
Yeah. And they may talk about their shopping trip to Target and leave it at that. And then that's there you go.
You have to follow their lead.
Yeah.
You do. You have to follow their lead and they might open up to you. And if they do, bravo to you. Kudos to you. Like, that means there's something special and calm and comforting and safe about you. And that is a real true compliment. So take that. Yeah. And if they don't take it as the opposite either. Yeah. They're just not in a space to be talking about it yet, because most of the people who are still in the trying to conceive journey when they're going through infertility, meaning they're seeking medical treatment and going through all the steps and processes, they feel like they're held together by a piece of tape. Mm. And one gust of wind from the wrong direction will make them fall apart.
Yeah.
So if you were to ask them to say, hey, so when are you going to make George a dad? Mm. That could be the thing.
Yeah.
Or when are you going to have a baby? You would be such a great mom. It sounds so good, right? On the outside. But what do you want her to say?
Yeah.
Do you want her then at the bridal shower when everybody's all prim and proper and sipping their tea to say, actually, I've been trying for 7 months. I've had 6 surgeries. We've had 3 losses. I'm out $40,000. I have bruises all over my stomach. I've gained 15 pounds and I don't know if I'll ever be a mom.
And that's the honest truth.
Like, is that what you want them to say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, clearly, I'm literally 7 years past my own journey, but I feel it because it's in me.
Yeah.
And it's a part of my story, and this is why I do what I do. Because I want to help that woman who doesn't have me in her ear, telling her how to be strong enough to handle those kinds of things. And I want to prevent more women from saying that kind of stuff. Because again, I know your heart is in the right place if you want to ask her about her baby making, family growing. I also know that when you were going through your 20s and 30s, that's what everybody asked.
Yeah.
Right? We're in a society where it's hit that check mark and go next. It's never about being present where you are and celebrating that. Mm. And so if it's you're dating, oh great, when are you going to get married?
Yeah.
Or engaged. You're engaged. When are you getting married? When you get married, when are you going to have kids? It's like, when you have one kid, when are you going to have another?
Yeah.
Even like, again, for the infertility for us, like people are like, oh my God, your baby is perfect and adorable. When are you going to have another? It's like, oh, we tried and we had a miscarriage. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah.
And I'm now at the point where I will say that to somebody who says that to me in Target, a complete stranger. I have literally, a woman in Target was like, your daughter is so cute. When are you going to have a second? And I looked at her square in the eye and I said, actually, we had to do IVF to have her. And we did a third round. We've had to pay 100% out of pocket. And we lost that baby due to a miscarriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks for bringing that up.
In the grocery store.
Right. So like, there's parts and times and places, right? So again, to the mom who wants to be the friend and to be kind, like the best thing is to look at that woman as a whole person right now in exactly the stage she's in. She does not need to have a baby to be more worthy or more interesting or more anything, more loved. She's amazing right now where she is. And so if you just ask, what have you been up to recently? She will tell you the thing she wants to talk about.
Mm.
And again, that could be because her marriage is falling apart, not even going through infertility, right? Like there could be right. a sickness in the family. You don't know what people are going through behind the scenes. And so when you keep it a little bit more general and a little bit like we can go deeper than what's the weather been like. I get that. I love talking deep. Like I'm the kind of person as soon as we talk 3 minutes in, it's like, tell me what keeps you up at night and what makes you cry. Like,
yeah,
I like to go deep, but you need that permission from both parties. Yeah. And that's the thing I learned through coaching is that both people need to be willing to go to those depths.
Yes. Yeah. Reciprocity for safety, mm-hmm. for sure. That is so good. So hearing all of this, what would you want to leave for those that find themselves at the beginning part of this journey with infertility? What would you want them to know today?
Well, there's never just one thing for
okay,
me.
No, go for it.
One is this is not just you. I promise everything you're thinking and feeling and going through, I have heard someone else going through it and not just one other person. Like you're not alone. The second thing is that the way we think, the thoughts that go through our head impact our quality of life while we're waiting. Mm. And there is a way to change your quality of life while you're waiting. And that's what I like to help people do.
Yeah.
Because nobody's taught us that stuff otherwise. It's always just put your life on hold until you hit that next milestone. And I really like to help people understand how they can enjoy their life while they're waiting, mm-hmm. while they're still going after that goal. And the third thing is this is not your fault. You didn't do anything. It's not because you're not worthy. It's not because you made some choices in your 20s. It's not because of the food you eat or anything. Like this is a medical diagnosis and you have it. And you're among some of the best people who also have it. And this is not something to walk through alone.
Yeah.
Just like if somebody got a cancer diagnosis, you would not blame them for that cancer diagnosis.
Yeah.
And you would not expect them to not go seek treatment and help and support. And so I wish more people would treat it that way. Mm. And this is temporary. It won't always be this way. I promise there's really good stuff on the other side.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And where can these people, where can anyone find you?
Well, I'm most active on Instagram. That's probably the best way to see everything. And my Instagram is at Kristen Dillensnyder. So that's my name. And I'm the big sister. Come and talk to me. Whether you're the auntie who's being really curious and you want to know what to say next time, or you're the person going through infertility, like every one of those conversations I have with people makes me feel like I am being the helper, like we said at the beginning, right? And it's it really makes a difference in these small little pockets because I can't work with everybody. I understand that. But if I can help one more auntie or even a colleague, right, at work who you see for 40 hours a week, learn how to be a little bit more sensitive, it's making a difference. So my DMs are always open. And I love having conversations with people.
Oh, well, thank you, Kristen, for being here. I've just loved talking to you because you just have such good information. And I love that you give more than one point, okay? Because I think my brain works the same way. You're like, bullet points, let me just give every bit of good information I have. That is awesome. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me. It's always a joy to talk with you.
All right. Thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll see you next time.